27th of April, 2016, in the Lucy Coleman Studio. Studio named after my wife of 34 years. Still sitting in this room, looking around, in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on God's good, great planet Earth. Welcome to the webcast. This is your internet pastor, PJ. Negativity. Why? I woke up this morning and I had a negative thought about someone, and I felt like kicking myself just real hard. I could not justify the feelings that I had. I guess the feelings were based upon selfishness. I don't like being selfish. It's so crude. Which is the best way to live our human lives? I guess that's what we're left to question ourselves about. Which is the best way to live in this life without becoming, becoming a pest or a bore or ridiculous? We're going to fade some music now because I want to talk with you about that. It would be a wonderful thing for us to get up every morning and to think about some good things instead of thinking about the negative things. If we get up every morning thinking about the things that make for love, peace, happiness, joy, you know, those things that we were taught years ago. I was looking at something, and they had a clip on YouTube this morning, and it was a clip of a church. I have to tell you the truth. Oh, Gabby put that up, and it was a church singing a praise song to Jesus to the tune of Prince's song, Purple Rain. It bothered me somewhat, and that's where the negative thought came from. I had a negative thought about this pastor, about these people in this church. Not out of disrespect to the life of that man, Prince. No disrespect, but I've always believed that the church was a sacred place, a place where things... a place where certain things would not ever take place in it. You know, that the place was consecrated in a way, made holy. That's what we people do. We consecrate our sanctuaries, and we make it of such that we don't do things or bring things on it that is that would bespeak of sacrilege. There's something secular and there's something sacred. Let me give you a good example. You married your wife, that's sacred. That's a bond or relationship between two individuals. That's your honey and you, her little bunny, getting out there making money. And so that they can have more honey. I understand the relationship. That's a sacred relationship. Any man, any woman, anybody coming in between that sacred relationship is wrong. That's why we have, in this society, licenses of marriage. We have a license that you have that you can have this sacred relationship with this person, and nobody is supposed to break into this thing or to destroy it or to come in between it. Every vestige of the church that I see lately has crashed, just totally disappeared. I have to say, for the first time in my life, I never thought that I'd hear myself say it, but my friend Laverne must be right. And I can't say it, because if I say it, it would be sacrilege. You see? And that's the dilemma that I find myself in. I feel so poorly about what the church has done. They have taken sacred, holy things and cast it up against the wall like it means nothing. Yeah, it bothers me. It bothers me tremendously. First thought that entered my mind is that people would say, well, what about you? Maybe if you had stayed at the helm, the church would be strong. No. You don't base the strength of an organization on a person in that organization. You expect the people in that organization that believe in the organization to put forth some kind of insurgency. Religious tradition is strong and will always be strong, especially in a city like Los Angeles. In any of our major cities across the country, you have a group of people meeting and conferring and being religious. Good morning, Broman. Broman just walked into my study this morning. I guess he's trying to tell me he doesn't see any food in this container. He'll be all right. I really and it just took all of the life out of me. And so I find myself these days spiritually having my devotions in the office, but I got to stay off this computer. I got to stay off of, as a matter of fact, I'm thinking about shutting my Facebook down, everything down. It goes along with the other negative thought that I had this morning. Maybe it's right for me to think about passing on and going on. Whenever I speak with people that used to be dear friends of mine, they ask me these questions now. I guess because I'm supposed to be bent over. One young man told me, he said, gee, it was just yesterday at the college. And he told me that he has a father my age, or maybe a year older, and he said he looks poorer compared to the way you look. I don't understand that. God has been good to me, and I want to continue to do what God wants me to do, but who can I do it around? Who can I do it with? There's no one. No one's going to believe it. I had an entire Bible study ready to put up on the internet last night. I had about 4 young men visit me, all different, and all at one time. I guess they had to come by. They just loved to spend some time hanging out with me. And they were freelancing. You know how they do with the music? All these young men were around 25, 26, and not all black and Hispanic. And they said, come on, old man, Busta Rhyme. So I listened to the little music that they had on their phone. You know what they do. And I made some lyrics work. And they said it was cool. When all of them left but one, I told one of the young men, I said, you know, I really want to thank you guys for coming out, visiting me tonight. It keeps me alive. It really does. When I don't want to be alive. You know, you come to this website, it's called Into the Word Apologetics. And it is that. I'm headed this Sunday to Hollywood. There's a I think the grandson of L. Ron Hubbard will be appearing at this particular place. One of my students told me about it. I plan to attend this Sunday, the Lord is willing, because I teach in my world religions class some aspects of Scientology. They'll be tested on an quiz number 4. And the students were telling me that, you know, he was a cruel man when he started his religion. His wife speaks about how cruel he was, and now he was nothing but a science fiction writer. Well, when you look at the church today, it looks like science fiction. It all looks the same. That's why I'm going as an apologist to this lecture. It's going to cost me $8 to get in. And I'm going. And why am I going? An experiment in human behavior, I guess. I don't go to church anymore on Sunday morning. I'll have worship here in my home. Worship God. I believe in God. I hope that God doesn't remain too silent here for so long, because it appears that not enough people want to hear from God. They want to hear from everything opposite of God. The way I had my personal faith wrapped, meaning the good that I got out of my personal faith, was that God was always, and I mean always, a very present help in the time of need. I don't feel God's presence in America like I used to feel. I don't feel it. Really, this is a very serious time coming up, this election. This because it's broad stroke politics now. You know, this I'm gonna, can I say it? I can say it on my website. I don't vote, and I'm not against me for not voting. I don't believe in the process. But the process, the way it's set up, and the way the Republican Party is looking at this thing, they do not want another 8 years of what Obama put on this country. Most people in this country know that Obama did not keep their promises. Here again, I was speaking with a young man yesterday, and he told me that he voted for Obama when he was a young man, old enough to vote. He listened to all that and voted for him, and he came to find out, and the young man said, I was wrong. Everything that I voted for him was wrong. That was the reason that I didn't vote for him. And I was telling this young man, that's why I didn't vote for him, because I knew that that could not take place. And it's kind of interesting, because as I come to the end of my college teaching career, because I don't want to be a full-time professor. I don't want to be that. The strain on me, if you guys can understand, my preaching years took all the vim and vigor out of me. My preaching years depleted the power and the strength. That's why I come on the website and do this, and I talk to a few of you. Maybe you can still relate to me. Most of the people that used to listen to me have stopped because they've decided to do whatever they were going to do. And a lot of people know of me and who I am, and they don't like that. And so they won't have too much to do with me. That doesn't bother me either. None of it bothers me. What bothers me is the abdication from what it means to be called a true believer. I've got to share this with you. Wow. And I have a little time. Excuse me for turning away. I have a book in my library. It's a very old book. Old. But great book. It's called An Introduction to the Book of Acts, and it's written by a guy named Stifler. And J.M. Stifler, Doctorate of Divinity, Professor of New Testament Exegesis in Kozer Theological Seminary. This text was published in this text was published in 1892. Okay. In 1892. Starts off, because you know I'm in the midst of writing my treatise, and so I'm reading the older books because I want to write my book like they wrote back in the day. He starts off in the preface and says, this is not a commentary. It does not undertake to explain the meaning of the words inscribed by Luke. It assumes that their meaning is already sufficiently obvious. Taking the book of Acts as it exists, this work attempts to trace out the course of thought and to account logically for all that Luke has written. The question continually before the author has been, why was this said? The facts are plain. What were they intended to teach? And then he goes on and says in this preface, this explanation shows in what sense this book is called an introduction. It is not concerned with the time or the place of the writing of the book of Acts. It touches no questions outside of Luke's document, except as a question is directly related to the historical facts given. The author of the book of Acts wrote with a purpose. That purpose is herein sought. Now, I'm going to stop right there, because as I was reading this and I said, my God, they don't write introductions to books like that now. They write it in terms of Christianity in a more dogmatic way, trying to say, this is the way it is. No, this author comes and says, I'm just going to give it to you the way it is. And he's absolutely correct, because the Bible was given to us in that way. It wasn't given to us to twist it, to perform eisegesis, just strict exegesis. Now, in the introduction of the book, I was reading the introduction, and let me start about a couple of sentences before I get into the sentence that I want to give acquiescence to and kind of get your opinion of it. My opinion is that I've known that all alike. All the years that I spent in the church, I knew that the organization of it was nothing that Jesus could ever put forward. You know, we go to that scripture that Jesus says, on this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of hell would not prevail against it. Well, I know what we say that verse means, but reading this ancient text, let me start reading it. And I want to start a couple of sentences before I get into the main sentence. All right, he's talking about law. He says, the book of Acts is a very brief history. It covers only about 30 years. But it is doubted whether any of those 30 years in all the world's centuries have been such marvelous social and religious changes. Changes too accomplished without war and without a system of shedding of blood. See, he's talking about when Christianity came upon the scene in the first century, the Christians weren't killing people. The Christians were doing what I try to do and what I try to personify on my website and what I tried to teach for the 34 years that I was married to my woman, It goes on and says, that law was never more scrupulously observed than in the period when it lost its divisive power. It had been a wall between Israel and the Gentiles. In the latter day, in the sottedness of their sin, despising the descendants of Abraham and being themselves heartily despised in turn. Nothing but the power and presence of Jesus can account for the coming together of these two diverse elements on the common level of a church. Now, when he says church here, he isn't talking about a denominational church. He's talking about ecclesia, or the called out. When Jesus comes on the scene as a religious leader, he isn't coming as a denominational leader. He isn't coming as a charismatic or as a reformed person. He isn't coming as a Baptist, a Presbyterian, a Methodist. He isn't coming as an Episcopalian. He isn't coming as a Latter-day Saint. He isn't coming like that. Now listen to what the author wrote. He said, and I quote, when Jesus Christ ascended to heaven, he left no church behind. Listen, listen to what this author says. Written back in 1892, before you had the T.D. Jakes, the Creflo Dollars, who's this white boy in Texas in that big thing with the big whirl on the stage? See, I'm trying to forget their names. I don't even watch Trinity Broadcasting Network anymore. I was researching a person that studied under me for years, only to discover that he's an associate pastor of a church. What? What? How can you become an associate pastor? You know what? I'm done. I am done. And the reason that Let me leave that alone. That Jesus Christ, when he ascended to heaven, he left no church behind. He left no commands for organizing a church. This is in the text. You have to know that. He left no commands to organize a church. In his instruction, there was nothing directly involving the idea of an assemblage of believers from all nationalities with no common bond but fraternal love, and no ruler but himself. To be sure, he twice mentioned the church, but there was nothing but the mention. This writer is dead now, but he's correct. I'll be dead soon, and I'm correct. You see, I don't need an organized church, organized religion, money whores, booksellers, people making themselves pastors without God doing it. God would never make you a pastor if you... No, I won't do it. But maybe God does call people like that now. Maybe God does. I'm confused. Not really. The author goes on and says, his hearers could not understand its significance. The author is right again. When Jesus spoke in the first century, they didn't understand what he was talking about. They were far from understanding much that he taught. Any one of the 12 who might sit down and reflect on moral obligations after the cloud had received Jesus out of their sight would find that they were just two. Number one, first, he must himself be a true holy man, loyal to Jesus. And secondly, that he must preach the gospel. The heavenly knowledge which Jesus' ministry imparted went far beyond mere duties. That knowledge gave comfort, insight, life, but not the idea of a church. He's right. He's right. These people didn't go to church. They met, they prayed together, they meditated together and all that kind of stuff, but they were no official body. They didn't have members. Mm-mm. that stuff started with man's organization, with Catholicism and all that other stuff. Hey, let's build us a big place and let's... No, I want you to listen to this, and this is just found in this wonderful introduction of this book. He goes on. The heavenly knowledge of Jesus' ministry imparted went far beyond mere duties. That knowledge gave comfort, light, insight, life to the idea of a church. Neither before his ascension nor after it did Jesus teach the disciples to organize a church. He did not. He never did that. And I recall when I, got tired because, I had been in this for years. And that's what I'm going to write in my book. And I pray God gives me the strength to do it, because I need to be home. I have to leave in a couple of hours to go to the college because I have an afternoon class. I have to drive all the way down there just to teach this afternoon class. And I have to save my money because once I, my classes run out, I don't make any more money like that. And I'm just going to have to live off of Social Security. And I don't get a lot of that. And it's rough. And I'm not going to ask anybody for anything. I'm going to have to redo everything to pay my bills because I have very little money coming in within a couple of months. And it's going to be very difficult for me to survive unless I get other employment. I'm 72 years old. I don't feel like starting a new career. I may try to get a job at McDonald's or something, bagging stuff up. Hell, I'm still in good shape. Just to, make ends meet. Buy a little dog food from a dog. But I want to write like this, and I want to tell the truth. And so I'm reading some older text, and I'm getting an idea of how to do that, because I don't want to write the way these writers write today. And I'm going to self-publish, and then I hope that God takes me on home. I'm not afraid to die. I want to. I can't take any more of this stuff that I see in the church. It is really messing with me tremendously. All right, let me finish this thing right here. Look. It says that their one public duty, he's talking about the people that listened to Jesus in the book of Acts. Their one public duty was to bear witness to his resurrection. That's all they were supposed to do, to bear witness of his resurrection. Hey, and how do you bear witness of it? He loved, you love. He was kind, you be kind. When these young men came by my house, they called me and said, hey, old man, can we come by your house and hang out with you? They weren't doing anything wicked and evil, just sitting around the table. And I'm glad that my home could be a refuge for them. One of them told me, the Hispanic kid said, it's great. We can come around here and hang out and talk when nobody's cursing and swearing. Nobody's mad at each other. He says, when I come around here, I almost wept, people. He said, when I come around here, I feel like I'm alive. I'm holding back the tears. You should have seen his face when he said that. And I just thought about God. And I said, thank you. Thank you. Because this guy wrote in this book, the one public duty for any believer was to bear witness to his resurrection. He made the church himself. It is his own creation. You see, only people that do what I do, the way I do it, can be called the church. And you have to do it from your heart. I had a young man call me last night around 11:30 in the morning. He told me he was hurting because an aunt of his had died. This young man has never been able to take death. And he kept saying, I love you, John, I love you. And he kept saying, "Do you love me back?" And I said, "It's 11:30. I'm asleep, man. I'm trying to get some sleep. I'm here all alone and I'm asleep." And he says, "And he says, I need you. I need you." I said, "What happened?" And he told me, and I said, "Oh boy, you'll be okay." And I told him, "Everybody dies. Everybody dies." And he always tells me, "Please don't talk like that. Because when you die, I don't know what I'm going to do." I'm saying, "No, you're going to find somebody else to love you out there." But it's few, far, and very in between that you're going to find someone to love you. To love a 24, 25-year-old young man that is a thief, a liar, a trickster, a con man, a hustler, street hustler, and a good one at that. Every time he gets locked up, he's out. And that blows my mind. And he calls me, and he tells me that he loves me. Now, what kind of a pastor am I, huh? What? You have people like that that love you? No, Jesus said, go out into the highways and the byways and to compel them to come. He didn't say to go and get a church member. Go and get a nice young man that's going to take his family to join some religious organization and stuff like that. He didn't say that. Some of the people that used to attend Bible study with me know these young men, or some of these young men. I have a new group that comes through. Some of them couldn't stand them. They couldn't even realize why I would have them in my home. Yeah, I need some time off from that teaching at that school so I can clean my house properly. These young men don't know how to clean a house. Goes on. When it talks about these people, the book of Acts naturally falls into a number of concentric sections, like the circles that mark the yearly growth of the church. Each new one includes all that went before it. Then it talks about the sections and the stages. And then it starts off in section 1, the preliminary chapter, Acts chapter 1, verses 1 through 26. And it really talks about it. But I love the way the book starts. The book starts off with reality. He did not say to go and build a church. And that's why when I see all these things going on in the church, and especially black people, and I'm not talking about becoming an atheist, because God is God. Jesus did exist. He wasn't a historical person that existed. Unfortunately, the way that he is communicated to be is improper, is wrong. And that's why I still have my jackets with the bulldog on it, and I'm going to continue to wear it. I'm going to wear it Sunday when I go to that lecture. And when somebody says, "Oh, are you pushing the church?" I said, "Nah. The church is going, I'm pushing the biblical perspective." I believe that Jesus, if he were walking the earth today, and I think he is walking the earth today in the hearts of those that believe in what he taught. I give you an example right now. Excuse me. I have to grab a book off the shelf, and I have to take the headsets off my head, lean backwards, and you know that book that I'm grabbing, the book that I've been grabbing in this studio since I put this studio together in the year 2002, still grabbing this book. I'm turning to the book of John, one of my favorite books in the Bible. Listen to what Jesus says. Quoting from John chapter 1, I want to start with verse 45. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets spoke." And then Philip names him, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Now, that's all they could call him, is the son of Joseph, because they know that he worked in a carpenter shop with his stepfather. And Nathanael said, "Can any good thing come out of Nazareth?" That's like somebody saying, "Can any good thing come out of Watts? Can any good thing come out of Compton? Can anything come out of South Central, these street-walking brothers that I meet? They call me with a load of dirty clothes. Can I come over and just wash my clothes, John? I got that invitation yesterday. Not an invitation, but somebody asked. And I told somebody, I said, no, he can't come by my house and wash his clothes. He's a thief. I said, I would not allow a thief in my house unless I were home in my house to keep my eye on the thief. Now, I'm going to love him when I get home. If he has those dirty clothes, he can come in, wash the dirty clothes while I supervise it. But, you see, so can any good thing come out of Los Angeles? Yes, but you got to watch it. You see, Jesus was not a fool. Now, listen to this. Right. Can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, come and see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and said to him, look, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no guile. In other words, he says, there's no hypocrisy in this man. Nathanael said to him, now first of all, how did Jesus know that? I don't know. He's the Son of God. He knows me. He knows you. He knows your mama, your granddaddy. He knows your cousin. He knows your neighbor. He knows the man driving in the car next to you on the freeway right now. He knows all these people. See, and that's what makes him God. And you know, whether you believe that or not, that's up to you. But look what Nathanael said to him in verse 48. How do you know me? Jesus answered and said to him, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. That's what I like about God. I can talk with him about anything in my life. He knows everything about me. See, when I read these verses, I'm reading it in the real. He knows me, he knows you, he knows everything about us. God knows everything about us. Nathanael answered him, Rabbi, which is another term for teacher, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. You see, because he knew that he knew him, so he acknowledges him. That's what a believer does. A believer acknowledges God when God reveals a truism to him. That's what I expected out of the church. Acknowledge God. Don't bring in a song of Prince and turn it into a praise song when you acknowledge Prince. Because some of the things that Prince acknowledged in his life are anti-God. I mean, what is the church doing? Asinine. Wait a minute, verse 50. Jesus answered and said unto him, because I said to you that I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You shall see greater things than these. See, Jesus said, oh no, don't be carried away by something that you don't understand. There are far more things that you don't understand that you will come into understanding when I reveal them to you in the time to come. I think that's why God has me living all these years, because he wants to show me something. I love him so much. I'm going to be faithful and do. Hey, let me speak to Andreas, the young man that asked me why aren't I doing a webcast every day. Andreas, pray for me, man. Young man, pray for me, 20 years on the planet. just petition God for me. When that young man spoke to me a few days ago, I was looking at him, and he didn't know what I had going through my mind, of course. And that's why I love conversing with people, because when I converse with people, you never know what the other person has going through their mind. First of all, I saw this young man is 20 years old, and I thought about myself when I was 20. That was before I got drafted. Thought about all the years that I had before me. Now look, in a flash, bow, they're about gone. Not gone, but gee whiz, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. 50 years, man. Gone in a blink. In verse 51, Jesus said unto him, truly, truly. And whenever you see that repeated, it's putting emphasis on it in the language. You need to pay attention. He says, truly, truly, I say to you, you shall see the heavens open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. He told him, you shall see it. He didn't say anything about me seeing that. He said, you're going to see it, Nathaniel, because you believe. Now, I believe that because I believe in the same way that Nathaniel believes about Jesus and about everything that he says, and I'm going to continue to love people in my environment. I'm going to continue to love blacks, whites. I'm going to love the Trumps, the Hillary Clintons, the Bernie Sanders, George W. Bush. I'm going to love these people. I'm going to love my neighbors. Look like Mexico around here, man. Gonna love my neighbors. I know. People mess over you. People do all this. I want to love. I hope that when I die, and I'm serious when I say this. I am serious. I hope that when I die, God allows a smile to be on my face. I saw a homeless man yesterday. I was coming home from work, and I took the off-ramp off of the 110 freeway northbound, and I exited on Florence. And I went all the way to Florence, and there was a homeless man laying in the gutter in trash. He looked like he was inebriated. But he was a black man. He was older, plus 50 at least. Okay, bro, man, I'll feed you in a minute. Give me a minute. And I saw him lying in the street, and I looked at him, and I thought about me, and I said, I wonder where my end come to this. And I wonder how it would be if I were laying in the gutter. I'm just seriously looking at it. I said, I wonder would I still love God to the degree that I love God, and would I trust him? Now, I know what the Bible says. The Bible says that I've never seen the righteous forsaken and his seed begging bread. That does not mean that that will not necessarily become my lot. I just hope that if it does become my lot, that I can set up, at least set in the street, clean up the trash around me, and have a brush to brush my beard or my hair, and at least look decent when I ask someone for a quarter. But to lie in the street like that, and I see more and more of that in Los Angeles, on the street corners, more and more of it. And I must tell you, I did feel a great deal of pain for him. Giving him money wouldn't help. The social programs that used to exist no longer exist. And so he's out on the streets, and it appears that nobody cares. Nobody is doing anything. I love him. And I drove off and I felt an emptiness because I couldn't do anything. When I was pastoring the church, you know what I'd do? When I was pastoring the church, I would have gotten out of my car, kneeled over. I mean, I was in a lane. I wanted to get out of my car, but there were other cars behind me. I'm in a lane of traffic. I can't hold up traffic talking with a bum or a person that needs assistance like that. But I still have compassion and love in my heart. But I don't know what to do because I am overwhelmed by the need. And I'm calling upon those, because I've been speaking long enough here, I'm calling upon those of you that are really believers, not church members, because it's not about your church. It's not about... I recall years ago, John MacArthur used to send some of his white parishioners down to black South Central Los Angeles to minister to the homeless and things like that from my church. And they didn't even know how to speak to these people. I remember I used to have to give lessons on how to just confront people. And I said, what's wrong with you guys? You love them. Yeah, and you don't need me to. And what they said, well, what do I say to them? How do I speak with them? I said, are you people believers or what? How did Jesus speak to the masses? He went up to them and engaged. Yeah, okay. My dog is moaning. He's hungry. Thank you very much for coming to my website. Thank you. I want a personal thank to Andreas again. Thank you, son. You're an angel to me, man, because you're a messenger from God to keep me up and at it. That's what you are. I love you for that, man. I've met a lot of men in my life, but this young man walks up to me and say, why aren't you doing what God told you to do? See, this is my new bully pulpit. This microphone, this office, this house, this life. Since the church will not allow that to be done in an institutionalized way because it just smacks of greed and forfeiture of what true, it's like a pair of good jeans. True religion jeans is a good pair of jeans. Yeah. I have to get me another pair of those. Thank you so much for coming to my website and listening to me. Thank you for offering up meditative prayers on the benefit of my life. I feel it in my system, in my body, in my bones. God loves me. And I got some toast in there and a little butter. Going to make a couple of pieces of toast and maybe eat a couple of fig bars and some juices, and I'll be good. That'll be breakfast for me. And I'll go to this college and teach this class and try to keep my mind focused upon what I'm supposed to teach as we come to the end of the semester. What a joy to be able to speak with some of you people that listen to me, those of you that are riding the train, the buses, driving in your car. I enjoy this technology that you can hear a webcast right now. So let me get off and upload this so you can listen today. God bless. You know the drill. Whatever you do, stay in the Word.